All right, welcome to the Retro Game Club podcast, season 3, episode 5, which is also episode 77. And with me is someone who also retired from Sega, Hugh.
That's right. Yeah, I got a nice watch and everything.
Is anyone working there anymore, or is it just like the interns running the show now?
I don't know. There's a lot of rumors that they're trying to restructure the company to sell it. But I don't know what to believe, really.
Yeah, every few years they say Microsoft's going to buy it, and that's been going on since, I think, the Xbox One came out.
Yeah, that would be a bad one. I'd rather Nintendo bought them, but Nintendo doesn't really seem interested in acquiring other competitors, really.
Yeah, they have their own pretty strong first party games. What's been going on?
Let's see, what has been going on? So I got Doodle World in the mail, but I did not start it yet because it had the misfortune of arriving the same day as East 9. So it was a very tough decision, but I'll probably start Doodle World this week. Maybe I'll make it my Game Club pick so I have motivation to start it. Really nice packaging. I mean, I got it. It got here in one piece, good condition, with a little thank you note and everything. So very excited to start that soon. Let's see, I also got, I didn't put this on the show notes because this just arrived today. This is part of me ordering too much stuff from Limited Run Games.
Nice, another East Origin.
Yeah, this is the fourth East Origin physical copy I bought. And it's funny because I didn't remember if I bought the big collector edition box or the regular edition. So I'm like, you know what, when it arrives, I'll just be surprised. And I guess I bought the big box one.
It looks pretty big, yeah.
It's pretty heavy, yeah. And I'll probably actually open this one. I have it on Vita, too. I have, like, basically the same box on Vita, and that one I've not played. Because why would I play it on Vita when I have it on, like, every other system? But then why would I buy it on Vita? It's very, very troubling, these things I do. So, yeah, and then I started East 9, which I'm really enjoying so far. I'll say the pacing is a little bit different than what I expected. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to get, like, into spoilers or anything, but like if you like the you know, tower defense sort of mechanic of East 8, there seems to be a lot of that in East 9. And again, like the original, the story kind of starts off kind of slow paced, but then, you know, I think it picks up pretty quickly. Like once you get to the first real dungeon, it really feels like an East game again. And you know, it's sort of weird, like East 8, I sort of joked about how similar it was to the Trails of Cold Steel series, like the characters, a lot of the side stuff you do, fishing, all those kind of things. Like it was really like, let's take a bunch of stuff from Trails of Cold Steel and put it into East. And so far East 9 seems to be a fairly straightforward, I won't say straightforward, but it seems to be new characters, new setting. It doesn't seem to be borrowing a lot from their other games. So far I've not gotten to a part in the game where there's fishing, so.
Yeah, I was going to say there is no fishing, which I will welcome that. Yeah, I started it as well. I want to say I'm 7 or 8 hours in. What's the last thing, without spoilers, what's the last thing that happened to you in the game? We could see where we are.
The last thing that happened is I opened up another part of the city, which maybe doesn't narrow it down because I think you do that like 3 times in the beginning. What's a non-spoilery thing that I did recently? So I only have like one character in the party besides Adol so far, and I'm on route to get the second one.
Okay, like yeah. I'm deep into the second character.
Okay. Yeah, I'm at the part where you know who the second character is, but they haven't joined yet, so I just have to go finish that. And I just didn't, like last night, there's a side quest kind of early on that I don't know how on earth they called an optional side quest. because if you don't do it, like I can't imagine how you even finish the game without doing this one side quest. But because of that, I got like the trading, you know, where you can like trade materials and craft some new stuff. So instead I was going out and just gathering materials so I could overpower the characters that I had already.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's an East game.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty much starting with like E7 onward is when they did that kind of mechanic.
Yeah, this game, I am enjoying it so far. You know, it's not up there with East 8, but that's, you know, just an incredible game. Nothing wrong with this game at all. I definitely like it a lot. I'm enjoying it. It's definitely more complicated than the previous East games. I find myself getting confused with the buttons a little bit.
Okay. All right.
The attack mechanics are... I had kind of the same problem with Final Fantasy VII, too. It just get a little bit too complicated for me. But I'm sure I'll get there.
Yeah, I don't find the controls to be that different than East 8. I actually loaded up my East 8 save game because at some point I remapped the buttons to... like a setting I liked a lot. And I started East 9. I'm like, wait, every time I went to attack, I ended up jumping. And I'm like, okay, hold on. Let me load up my save game. look at where I mapped the buttons last time.
You know,
and, yeah.
You're right. This, the button, I never remap buttons just because I'm like, well, they did this for a reason. But I should do that because I think that is part of my problem. I keep going to dodge and I keep just jumping and just getting run down.
Wait, hold on. Okay, I want to ask about remapping. If you say you never remap button, did you play the Star Wars game on PS4, the first one? It was like a launch title, probably.
Was that the Battlefront game?
Yeah, Battlefront.
Yeah.
I can't remember the name, because I hated it. Did you notice that, like, in the spaceship levels, the steer the spaceship and move the camera analog sticks were reversed? And did that drive you completely insane if you don't remap buttons?
I can't remember because I always inverse vertical. So maybe I kind of fixed that beforehand. It's always the first thing I do in games. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I'm like, why am I steering with the wrong stick this entire time?
Oh, the sticks are flipped? Like you're using the wrong
stick? Like, yes, like left and right sticks are flipped in that.
I can't remember that. That's funny, though.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually quit the game after that. I'm like, this is just... In general, I just sort of found it kind of boring. It was, like, graphically impressive, but super boring.
Yeah, it was not that great. If you play East 8 and...
Memories of Celceta?
Yeah. You get certain items. It looks for your game saves, and you get certain items that you wouldn't without it. I don't know what those are. But it's a reason to play those before this.
Yeah, so they're actually really powerful items. Like, the beginning, you start off kind of weak, and one of the items gives you, like, plus 200 hit points and plus 10 strength, something like that. And it makes a real big difference in the beginning, because you start off with only, like, 100 hit points. Otherwise.
Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah, so I thought those were cool. Cool bonuses. But yeah, that's what I'll be playing for, you know, I'm going to kind of pace it for a while because we have at least 10 days of sub-zero weather here in Chicago. I don't know if you saw that on the news. I'm sure you have the same.
Yeah, it's not great.
But it's like, you can't even go to the store cold. Like, it's pretty nutty here. So there'll be something to do in the evening. So speaking of something to do in the evenings, I also did the very depressing PlayStation 5 2020 recap, which for some reason they launched in February.
Mm-hmm.
Have you done that yet?
Not yet. No.
Yeah. Yeah. It's depressing when you actually see like the number of hours you played games in 2020. Like when you just see like a number. And then it does this weird thing where it like shows you how many hours a day you played on average by day of week.
Uh-huh.
So it sort of reminds you that like, you're not in your 20s and Friday and Saturday are no longer like times that you're out doing fun stuff. But for some weird, weird reason, like Wednesday night, I almost never play games, it turns out. And I don't know why that is.
You think you're just crashed out those nights?
I have no idea what is wrong with Wednesday that I don't play enough games.
That's funny. I'll have to check mine out for next episode.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not like as good as your Spotify recap. It only is like, here are your top three games and what days you played games on.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
All right, so that's about it for me, man. What have you been up to?
I started working out again because we can't go outside. I can't go for a bike ride or anything. So, you know, for Christmas, my wife got me one of those things where you go to a website, you watch some videos and work out. And the one I was doing this morning, I don't know why, it just reminded me of Parappa the Rappa. Like, the way the instructor was, like, telling you how to do stuff to the music, I really felt like And if you do these kind of high intensity workouts, all it is just flailing around a room. That's all it is. You're just moving around like an idiot for half an hour. But yeah, I had flashbacks, prep, or the rap, and not doing very well. But last week we talked about the new 3DS only games, and we were a bit confused on those. So I loaded those up this time. And here, let's see, where did I put those? I fear we talk about this for a second. The catalog is not huge. So these are games that you can't play on just a regular 3DS. It has to be the new 3DS or the new 2DS. And
it's like four games.
Yeah, it's like strange stuff. There's a bunch of old games like Super Mario Kart and Super Mario World, Super Metroid and Super Punch-Out. Well,
right, that's because they made a Super Nintendo emulator, like a thing where you could download Super Nintendo games through Virtual Console. But it only runs on the new 3DS, not the original 3DS.
That's so strange.
That's why that list shows up. So it looks like they made a bunch of games. It's not really. It's just they have Super Nintendo Virtual Console.
Okay, okay.
On the 3DS, which they didn't have on original DS. So I think the other games, I'm not looking at the list yet, but it's Minecraft, Xenoblade Chronicles, and Persona Labyrinth.
Binding of Isaac. Like
that. Okay.
And 6180, The Moon. I don't know that one.
Never heard of that.
You'd think Minecraft would be really impressive on 3DS, but it is not.
It is not. Yeah, it's okay. Cool. Yeah, my kid has it. My youngest kid had like a really old DS. So I ordered the 2DS XL at some point. Mm-hmm. Which is actually a new 3DS, but it's called 2DS.
Yeah.
And it's a flip screen. So I don't know why I did that instead of the 3DS. I think it's smaller because, it's a smaller thing. Mm-hmm. And she likes it, but no, it's not super impressive.
No. Runbow, I've never heard of this game before.
Never heard of it.
Yeah. So, it's still worth getting a new 3DS over the old one if you like the 3D part and it's a bit faster. 3D looks better, but so I figured we just kind of answer that question from the last episode. But
I've never once even turned 3D on my 3DS ever. Something with my eyesight, like the 3D stuff just looks like a blur.
Wow, it looks good to me, but it's an instant headache too.
Well, there you go.
Our news items this episode, it's a bunch of items I've been saving because we've had so many in the past. So a lot of these news items are a bit older, but I saved them because their date really didn't matter. You know what I mean?
Right. And if you're anything like me, you often are backlogged on podcasts, so you're already hearing most of the news late anyways.
Exactly. Yeah. Should we dive in?
Yeah. Yeah.
Super Mario World made Mario who he is today. So this is a Game Rant article that I'm not sure I agree with, but pretty much it just says like, yeah, the first three Super Mario games were great, but Super Mario World really set the stage for the future. I don't really know about that.
No, I disagree.
I disagree with this article.
Yeah, I mean, Super Mario World, I like the game, but it's funny. It actually feels like a stripped-down version of Mario 3.
I
like,
agree.
The graphics are better, but, like, the world is smaller, and it just seems like Mario can do fewer things than he could in Mario 3. It's really weird.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I've tried to play Super Mario World a few times, and I've actually never gotten through it just because I get bored. I'm not saying it's a bad game. I just say I think I like Mario 3 better. Oh, yeah. There's a Famicom documentary that was only in Japanese from 2003 that is getting a translation, and it has a lot of big names being interviewed, like Kojima and people like that. I heard this was a fantastic documentary. It's only about half an hour, I think, but keep an eye out for that. Where is the...
It is on the YouTube.
Oh, there you go. So you can already watch it.
It is subtitled. And 1,687 people have seen it so far. Seems like there should be more.
Yeah, it does seem like there should be more.
I guess you could turn on subtitles, though, to make it work, don't you?
True, yeah. So, yeah, check that out. That's on, this is on, obviously, in our show notes, but NintendoEnthusiast.com, which I really don't remember going to much. What else do we have here?
Yuji Naka did not do well on Sega's 60th anniversary test.
Yes, he probably did worse than most of the biggest fans. He didn't know who, what, Needle Mouse was, and Mr. Needle Mouse.
Right, like, I don't think George Lucas would do very well at a Star Wars trivia contest.
Yeah, the super fans just know everything, you know, right. And
stuff. I mean, Harrison Ford, for sure, wouldn't even get, like, the name of his character, right?
Yeah.
Rejected Sonic designs appeared in Eggman's Time Machine, which I think is that the same thing as Mean Bean Machine?
Wait, the title itself is also a reference to Dr. Robotnik's Mean Bean Machine. Rejected Sonic designs like chicken, cat, rabbit, and wolf all appear. So, yeah, this definitely shows him as a rabbit.
That would not have gone nearly as well.
No.
I think being sort of an oddball animal helps a lot, because it's going to sound really weird, but people don't have, like, preconceived notions about what a hedgehog is. Like, I don't know if I could actually identify a hedgehog if you showed me a picture.
Yeah.
So it basically makes him a fictional creature. Versus rabbit, you might expect them to have some rabbit qualities, like they would be eating carrots or messing up your garden or whatever it is that rabbits do, right?
Yeah. And it's not even a good design anyway. It looks like a 1950s Disney design. This next one is really cool. This is on Hackaday. It's a 3D printed Raspberry Pi arcade cabinet. That,
yeah,
it looks like something, I don't know, it looks like a sideways U, really. You really have to see this picture to see it, but was it Sarin that did those 50s, I think he mm-hmm. helped with, like, the Sydney Opera House and stuff like that. It's a very Sarin-type design.
Yeah. It's very kind of, a little bit of like, an early arcade feel to it. Like, you look at, like, early arcade cabinets, early Pong and stuff. They have an aesthetic very similar to this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is kind of neat. It's pretty easy on the eye. So if you have a 3D printer, it tells you all the parts you could get too.
Yeah, if you just have one of those lying around.
I think I'd be shocked if a lot of our listeners didn't. I think they've really come down in price. It's one thing I have not gotten into, though, because I'd make like two things and never use it again.
Well, I would make two things that both failed badly. And then never use it again. Let's see. Someone bought a Game Boy at a thrift store, and it turns out it was used. That's me reinterpreting the headline here, which is original Nintendo Game Boy unboxing doesn't go as planned. Well, yes, because you bought it at a thrift store and it was used.
Yeah. Like, I guess he was making this big reveal video on YouTube, and he opens it up, and it's like there's cat hair in there. It's all scratched up. But the headphones run used, so that's good.
Yes. So one time, I guess I won't tell the story completely, but I was at a thrift store and there was a boxed Genesis game. I'm like, oh, cool, boxed Genesis game. And I grab it and I open it to make sure there's a game in there. And a six pack of something fell out. So someone was using the Genesis case to hide... probably hide something from their mother, who then one day rounded up all their Genesis games and dropped them off at the thrift store without looking inside any of them.
Wow. That's amazing.
It was pretty funny. It was like a sitcom moment. I did laugh in the store. It was pretty funny. That would be a better failed unboxing.
Yeah, absolutely. On Retro RGB, Axonworks, I guess that's how you pronounce it. Okay. Created something called the JAMA extractor. And this is something you could put into your arcade cab and stream, I guess, on Twitch and stuff, what you're playing. It's kind of a cool device. It also supports...
Yeah, that would make a lot of these like Twin Galaxies controversies go away if you had equipment like this in the past.
Exactly. Yeah. And this also, it's really geared towards the cabinet cabs. So like the little sit-down cabs you see in Japanese arcades. Because it actually supports three outputs. So it has... a lot of people don't realize, but, you know, you can link up a lot of cabinet cabs to play, like, Street Fighter 3, Third Strike, and stuff like that. And it actually only uses the PC board in one of the cabs.
Yeah.
And it just, you know, the monitor and the controls, you know, cable over to the second cab. So this can support all that, too. So really cool device. And I don't think it's $80. It's not too bad.
Yeah, that's actually not bad. Because if you were going to start, if you wanted to stream arcade games, this seems like pretty nice. It has output to RGB monitor, HDTV, so basically HDMI out, and capture card. So you can like you said, you can output like three different things at once.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. But I don't stream myself playing.
No. But if you did, I mean, I'm saying I don't know if on Twitch, if arcade streaming that isn't done through MAME is a very common thing.
Yeah, I don't think so. And a lot of times it's just a camera pointed at the screen if it is.
Yeah.
What do we got next here?
Recovered video from 1990 gives a look inside Nintendo of America headquarters.
Oh, yeah. Did you get a chance to watch this video at all?
No, I'm looking at it now. Mostly it's the clothing that's funny, but...
Yeah, it's very late 80s, early 90s, and it's cool. It's an unedited video, so you see them kind of doing stuff twice. It's, you know, second or third take on a few things, and you hear the director talking. But, yeah, you kind of see the tools they use. They have the game testers all in one room, just a bunch of dudes playing games, and the manager walking around kind of barking orders at them. I mean, he seems like a nice guy.
Yeah, these game testers look like the most miserable people on earth. Yeah. Look, do you see any of them smiling? Like, yes, I enjoy this game I'm playing.
Yeah, becoming a game tester as a kid sounded like the coolest job in the world, but the reality, I think, is pretty different.
Oh, yeah, it is. Game tester is, I mean, you're indoors at least, right? I mean, you're not like, tarring roof at 90 degrees or something, right? But man, it's just such a monotonous, horrible job. And you have to test, when you're a game tester, I mean, you're testing games that you would never, ever want to play.
Yeah. Over and over again. And certain parts over and over again.
Yeah. Yeah, you got to fill out like Jira tickets probably. And, oh, sounds awful.
The manager's talking about how they have to do an oral, get in your oral exam for Final Fantasy. I don't even know what that means.
I don't know either. What would be on a Final Fantasy oral exam?
I don't know. Like
they quiz you on Final Fantasy to make sure, I don't know.
Like you actually played it? I don't know.
Okay, yeah.
And what do we got here? Oh, this is some hard-hitting news we got here. Hardest-hitting story we've ever, ever talked about. What color was Apple's beige?
Yes. What is the RGB spec of, or the, what's the term people use nowadays?
Pantone. Yeah.
Yeah. I only use her, like UX designers use that term, and I still know what it means. This is some paint that was used to make Apple beige, which would be nice for like, if you made a game room and you weren't going to do like an arcade theme, painting it this color would be pretty nice.
Oh, totally. Yeah. It's kind of a nice taupe or something, but definitely a nice earth tone there. But I mean, this is a very long article about paint and why it's hard to get right in 2020 and 2021. But the short of it is that they're pretty sure that it's Pantone 453, but every Apple is pretty much aged since then and kind of discolored a little bit. So it's hard to prove even with the stuff that's in the box that even without light, it changed color a little bit. So,
So this guy's blog is really all over the place.
On Medium, yeah. What else does he have here?
Oh, there's no consistency. I mean, I like it because there's zero consistency to what he writes about.
You're right. Some Java techniques, it looks like.
There's Java stuff. There's history of jazz lounges in San Francisco. There is how to recalibrate a classic turntable, air quality under stay-at-home orders. this guy's got a lot of interest, man.
Nice.
Review of Knives Out. Characters in 1990s sitcoms were younger than you remember. Oh, I'm going to read that later. Actually, I think they're older than you remember. I think he has Seinfeld here on the cover. And like when you're watching Seinfeld, you're sort of picturing like, you know, because they're all single perpetually, you're sort of picturing them as being like late 20s people, but they were all probably close to 40 when they were filming.
At least at the end, yeah.
Yeah. We didn't start the fire longevity infographic. How many things from We Didn't Start the Fire are still with us today? Wow. This is a cool infographic. I'm sorry to get like way off. But it's things that are mentioned in We Didn't Start the Fire that are still things today. Wait, where's Cola Wars? I'm trying to find it here. All right. So yeah, cool article. We skipped this one about text adventures, but since we're talking about Apple, we can talk about text adventures now.
Oh, I closed that one in accident. Let me reopen that. You wanna talk about this one while I reopen this one?
This is an article on Wired about how you can trace the roots of MMORPGs and even social media to games that used text commands only. Really, I guess social media is like a big text adventure, right?
Yeah, yeah. And this talks about Gemstone, and I wasn't familiar with Gemstone. Do you know what that is?
No, I'm actually not.
Apparently, if I'm reading this right, it was an AOL game text adventure that eventually went to the web.
Yeah, that's why I would not be familiar with it.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, and it goes through some MUDs and stuff like that. But, yeah, another really, really long article, but pretty interesting. Especially from an AOL perspective.
Yes, I never had AOL. So Toshihiro Nagushi, which I'm sure I butchered, steps down as CCO of Sega, which I guess stands for Chief Creative Officer.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense. But
so
yeah,
he's responsible for, like, the Yakuza series.
Yeah, so I wonder what he's going to be doing next. Or if he's just going to retire.
Hopefully he did not quit to go take a job at Google.
Stadia.
Yeah, I did read about how they basically fired everyone this week.
In the game development part, not the actual, like, hosting part, but... Yeah. Not a good sign.
Right. But if one of the selling points of Stadia was that you were going to get these exclusive games by some famous game developers, that is no longer a selling point.
No. I don't know if there are any selling points now.
The selling point for me is you can play PC games without having to do a lot of PC configuration. Is that it? You don't have to build a PC and configure it. That's the selling point, basically?
Pretty much, yeah. I played some of the... one of the Assassin's Creed Odyssey. Mm-hmm. And
that's not available on any home consoles.
Well, yeah, but still. Okay.
So what would be a thing like Borderlands? Is that a PC exclusive? Or is that on consoles?
That's on consoles, too. Let's see.
All right, Fallout 76?
That's on consoles.
Okay, what's the newest Fallout?
I think it's still just 76. Let's see. It's looking like a bunch of... Almost all the stuff is on consoles. So.
Half-Life Alyx.
It's... That's PC only.
Okay. I don't know what that is. I just Googled
it's a virtual. PC it's a VR games. Game, so I don't think it's on Stadia.
Okay.
Yeah, they have a big collection now, but
I sort of view it as like, you know, Steambox didn't work, so why would Stadia or Stadia, whatever, why would it work?
Yeah, I know. I mean, I think this is the way gaming is going to go, because you just don't want to keep buying a console over and over again. Just
oh, I know why it could work, because the problem, I know we're like getting way off topic and stuff. But we don't really, I don't think we have a topic this week, so
yeah,
we can get off topic. So Steambox was a Linux box, so you could only play Steam games that ran on Linux, which is like nothing. But Stadia, you can play Windows games, because Google's doing something to abstract the Windows licensing costs from you.
Yeah, I don't. Well, no, it's still a Linux backend, but yeah, I don't know how that works. I do know Stadia's games are Linux backend.
Hmm.
Because I remember one of the engineers blamed the Linux kernel for a bug it had, and Linus Torvalds came out and was like, "No, you're just stupid. You just used that totally wrong." Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, that was the problem, but it's because you shouldn't ever do what you're doing.
Yeah, there's nothing I enjoy more than reading leaked Linus Torvalds emails.
He is a very direct individual.
Yeah, occasionally there'll be like a Bill Gates email that leaks too, and really his internal communication style is not very different.
Yeah, I believe it.
He has a much nicer exterior.
Mm-hmm.
But he... yeah, he can definitely get pretty salty with staff too. All right, MLB Jam, a game that I would never watch. So I guess they're making it like an NBA Jam, but for baseball. And it looks a lot like the 32X baseball game, the whatever World Series baseball starring Deion Sanders. It graphically, the graphical style looks very similar to that.
Yeah, which I think looks pretty good. This was going to be called, so it's pretty much MLB Jam, but it was going to be called Power Up Baseball. And the funny thing about this is that the cabinet had, because they had like test cabinets at, you know, at their office, had two track balls, one for the pitcher and one for the hitter. And so you would just have to hammer on the track ball to pitch hard and then hammer on the track ball to hit really hard. So it's a really loud game. but I guess it just never came to be.
Yeah. I think it's a few sports where the sort of jam formula would work. I think it works best for, obviously it works great for NBA. I don't know if I can think of something that works quite as well. And baseball is a hard game to make in the arcade because both players aren't actively, you're not actively competing against your opponent, if that makes sense. Like, you throw the ball, and then you can let go of the controller.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? You know, like, it's not constant. Like, NBA Jam, you have to constantly be, you know, be participating.
Yeah. There is a ROM you could download to check this out. Pretty interesting. But, yeah, it's definitely not done. Definitely choppy. Choppy, kind of like Pit Fighter or something like that.
Yeah. I guess it could work with hockey, maybe. But yeah, I guess I think ice hockey on NES is basically a hockey jam.
That would be pretty good, though. I do think that would work.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think people, like, part of NBA Jam, though, is that you knew the players, and I don't think anyone can name a hockey player.
Yeah,
I mean, not like I want to say no one. Obviously, there are people who enjoy hockey. I'm just saying, like in the arcade, like that era in the '90s, anyone in an arcade could name like 40 NBA players. I don't think the average arcade goer could name 40 NHL players.
Yeah, agreed. Totally agreed. Yeah. At that time, all those guys were kind of rock stars.
Let's see. Awesome mod turns Doom into first-person Castlevania. So this is pretty cool. I mean, I get that we also had a game called Hexen, which was also Doom converted to first person Castlevania, sort of.
But this is way better. Yeah, yeah.
This is way better. This looks a lot. You have the whip.
Yeah, first person whipper, I guess. This is this very impressive mod. I mean, if they were going to make a first person shooter or first person whipper, whatever, of Castlevania, this is what it would look like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, this is really good. It's a free download. It's called Castlevania Simon's Destiny.
Very, I can't express how impressive this is. I mean, there's a full game, new villains and all that stuff, new monsters, and it looks like it plays really well.
Yeah, it looks really good.
I will not play it because my instant vomiting when I play first person games.
Those games. All right, so we got a couple more here. Another 2007 Nintendo Company Handbook has different logos for the Wii, and they're all awful.
I had a logo designer tell me that the simplest logos are the hardest logos. And yeah, I mean, the Wii logo is really simple, and they had to choose between hundreds of them. Could you imagine? It just looks like someone really went through some fonts and colors and just wrote Wii.
Yeah, but you got to worry because some fonts have a licensing fee. Mm-hmm. So you can't just use any font for commercial purposes. Some of these, I would say they're all, like, some of these actually look pretty good. A lot of them look really awful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think they chose wisely. Especially the first one that is kind of the first image in this. It's really bad. Like a little smiley face with the eyes between the... well, I guess eyeballs between the eyes. It's really, really bad.
An article, next one here is on Hackaday, and it's a breakdown of how Nintendo uses the two screens on the DS efficiently, and how they do different graphical layers on each screen and achieve 3D effects and all sorts of cool stuff.
Yeah, I love this article, and it's really complimented by the YouTube video, which is not by the same people that wrote this, I don't think. It really explains how the DS graphics work and how, there's a 2D accelerator and a 3D accelerator, and when you're programming, you just choose which screen gets the 3D acceleration. And of course, there's some, you know, hacking tips where between every frame you could flip which screen gets the 3D and kind of use it on both. It's pretty much 3D and 2D also built on top of the GBA's 2D engine and sprite engine, which I guess were really efficient. So, good job, Nintendo, in early 2000s. But, I mean, that was a big gamble, because the PSP, I mean, that was kind of what everyone thought was going to be the best, and it was a great system, but, you know, the DS became is it the greatest selling console ever? It's at least up there.
I think so, yeah. It's that or the PS2, where, so, you know, it's... regardless, it sold a ton. It's one of the highest selling, if not the highest selling.
More than the PSP and the Vita combined.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, the PSP is one of my favorite systems. I really, really like the PSP a lot. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, you basically have a portable PlayStation 2, and there's just a lot of great games on there. And even the movie selections, like movie and TV show selections you get on UMD, it's like such a microcosm of the era, you know? Mm-hmm. Like... If you want to know what early 2000s was like, you just have to look at the library of PSP movies.
Yeah, those are strange. I think I had the Hitchhiker's Guide movie. I think it came with my PSP.
Okay. Yeah. So I have a few. I'm, you know, once in a while I will bring them on like an airplane or something, so I don't have to be fleeced by the airlines for their data charges. All right, so OutRun's composer wrote a sound driver for Sega Genesis because he was not happy with the one they were using.
Yeah, apparently he liked to use a bunch of samples, what was this the original one for? Sword of Vermillion, which I've never played.
Sword of Vermillion is the game that he did the rewrite for.
Okay, which apparently has really good audio. Apparently it's really noticeable that it's a step above the rest at the time. And yeah, he just wanted to use a lot more samples, and he knew the Genesis was capable of it, so he took it upon himself to rewrite the driver.
Yeah, it is. It actually, the soundtrack to the game is really good. It's weird. It's a game I've started at least three times and have never played too far into. I probably need to give it like another try.
Is that is it turn-based?
Yeah, yeah. I think there's some action sequences in there, but it's mostly a turn-based RPG. I think what it is like, it's one of the, I think I would have to write a hacking tool for it first, because like, I seem to recall getting like completely destroyed within 5 minutes of leaving the first town. Which is not a good start. All right.
Yeah.
A couple more here. From projects that will be taken down soon, someone is doing an Ocarina of Time remake in the Unreal Engine. So good luck with that.
It is beautiful. It is really beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
I'm surprised this video still plays.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, it'll get a takedown letter pretty soon. So,
but I mean,
enjoy it.
Nintendo should just do this. They should just make this, or give the guy some money and say, "Can you just finish it?"
Yeah, they're not going to do that.
I know. But he has the mechanics down and stuff like that. The kind of dive and roll mechanic looks right on.
Let's see. So Zach added something to our show notes here. Ardu Boy gets an even smaller nano edition, or new nano edition. They already have one. So this is a tiny, tiny, tiny computer, and with an even tinier screen that you can, in fact, play games on if you have really amazing vision.
And the smallest fingers ever. So yeah, this thing is about the size of your thumbnail, maybe a little bit bigger. It's a little bit bigger than a quarter. Mm-hmm. Zach says he wants to see some microsurgery robots use this thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it definitely could be used for some really cool embedded devices. If you needed, you know, little tiny screens. I guess you could put bigger screens on it too, but yeah, very, it's tiny. Yeah, you could definitely swallow this thing, I guess.
Yeah.
It's about the size of a quarter. I mean, it probably would be a choking hazard, but you know.
This is something you would give like a action figure or a doll or something to make it look like they're playing a game and they were actually holding a real computer. Donkey Kong 64 developer cheat found after more than 20 years. So this is, you do some sequence in the B locker. You press up, down, right, left on the D-pad while homing ammo sound effects plays. And apparently this lets you, what does it do? This lets you go into the next level with a different amount of golden bananas. I guess they would use this for testing things.
Yes, I think to get into areas early.
With
so like, you could get past... So if a door needs like 100 golden bananas to enter and you only have 80, you could get in with something like that.
Ah, so you could just get in and start testing.
Yeah. It let you sneak into areas early.
If there are any of our listeners that are... game testers, can you write us and tell us what it's like? What it sounds like, just a grind. Like I full respect if you're a game tester.
25 years later, player confirms Street Fighter Alpha 2 really does favor the underdog. So this is similar to I guess Mario Kart.
Yeah, I don't really understand all the buffs and stuff like that in the Street Fighter series, but it has to do with buffs and combos.
Mm-hmm.
I just kind of know how to do a dragon punch, and then I mash some buttons.
And we got two more here. Tetris on CDI. Not fun to play, but has a John Tesh-like soundtrack, apparently.
I didn't know Tetris was on CDI, so I watched some videos of this. And
I did know that.
It's a strange, strange beast. It's like you're playing Tetris, but it's playing a video of a stream behind it to kind of calm you down with this John Tesh type music.
Yeah, I should probably just sell my CDI.
the CDI, it had everything going for it other than the price.
No, it had nothing going for it.
Well, if
I wholly dispute that.
Well, wait, it has a pretty good processor and stuff like that. It was a capable device. It just didn't have any software.
Well, it had a processor that was some proprietary Philips bit of technology that I assume people did not know how to program very well.
Mm-hmm.
It had a controller that was not designed for video games. I mean, you're basically trying to play games with a DVD remote.
That was definitely a problem, but that was an easy problem to fix. I mean, you could get different controllers, you know.
And luckily for me, it looks like a home, like a piece of home stereo equipment. That's why I got it for $5.
That is great.
Because it was in a thrift store wedged between a pile of other CD players and VCRs.
That is funny. Yeah. And probably someone that never heard of a CDI just threw it there.
Yeah. Why would the average thrift store worker know? Like, you can recognize video game systems, but this thing, it just looks like a CD player.
Mm-hmm.
And thrift stores have lots of CD players.
Yes. It was built around a Motorola 68000, at least the one I'm looking at. Well, oh, whatever. No. I won't go down this tangent.
No, I was just, I swear I looked at this recently and it was like some, hold on, now I'm going to, am I thinking of a different system? I don't know. So I thought it used.
Oh, here we go. It's a 16-bit 68070 CISC chip, the 68000 core at about 16 megahertz.
No. So it's using, so I guess I was wrong. It is a variant, and then it uses this graphics chip that this is some Philips proprietary. That's the thing I've been thinking of. Yeah, the Philips. Yeah. So the 6807 was not a Motorola chip. That was actually a Philips chip. So they basically took the 68000 and see what they have here that they added. It's not compatible with later. Yeah, of course. I love when they state the obvious, that it's not compatible with Motorola 68000 chips produced after it. Yeah, no kidding. how could it be? But it looks like it has, a built-in DMA controller. Okay, because you didn't have that before. Some additional timers and different, a little bit of different register architecture. Not too different, really. 24-bit address bus. So you could make bigger page, so your max page size is bigger than what you would get on the Genesis. And then, yeah, the graphics chip itself was something they made on their own.
Yeah. No one was making any good software for this at all.
So that's probably what I was thinking of. Like, you would have to know how to program that particular graphics chip.
Yeah. Yeah, and no one did.
No one did.
But anyway, more small Tetris news.
Tetris on Raspberry Pi Pico. So if you want to play small screen Tetris, here you go.
It's built right in, pretty much. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So yeah, a lot of
Tetris and Doom are on everything, aren't they?
I think
those are like the two benchmark games.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Yeah, how small or weird it is, but. Yeah, no, our topic this week, is our weird tangents.
Yeah, it's just kind of the mood I'm in here. In what is now becoming the annual polar vortex.
Yes. Should we, talk about some Game Club games?
Yeah, let's do that.
All right, mine were not great. Yours was, so I guess I'll just plow through mine. I did two this week because they were both pretty simple. I did Slalom on the NES. This was a 1986 game. It was a black box game. And Hugh, you're right about the music composer. It was his first game.
Okay.
So.
Yes, I said the music sounded like David Wise, but the Moby Games doesn't have credits for it. So.
Yeah, it was his first game. So good call. And yeah, it's Slalom. You downhill skiing. You're going downhill with slalom markers. You want to be either between them or on the side that the flag is facing. And if you aren't, it slows you down. And there's a bunch of obstacles like trees and other skiers and sledders. And this actually did have an upright cabinet. I don't know if I've ever seen one, but yeah, not a bad game. It's a pretty simple, kind of fun game. I'm not very good at it, but I don't know what else to really say about it. There's a few kind of jump mechanics that are pretty neat. Yeah, just kind of a generic skiing game, I guess, in my mind. It's developed by Rare. Yeah.
Yeah, I think for like a $60 game, for what was probably a $50 game, I mean, not 60, it was probably a $50 game when it launched, 40 or 50 bucks. It seems kind of small. It feels like it kind of feels more like a 7-800 game.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
Yeah. And it's fun, and I could see getting it for $5 or $10, but it's just it's really, really small game for its time. And I know a lot of like early Nintendo games, when I say Nintendo, I mean NES games. I know a lot of them were small, but this seems, I don't know, man. It's more complicated than Urban Champion, which is probably the worst ripoff of the early Nintendo lineup. But it's just too small. Like, there's, what, three courses, and they aren't particularly big. So it's kind of like, I guess it's, that's why I say 7800. So 7800 had Pole Position 2. Right. Mm-hmm. And to me, this has about as much depth as Pole Position 2.
Totally. Yeah. 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 It's three mountains you choose from, 24 downhill runs total. But still, it's.
And I know there's like four tracks in Pole Position 2, but one of them is just the practice track.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, definitely not worth the money. But not a bad game still. And then.
It's definitely not bad. I mean, I thought it was fun. I would have felt ripped off buying it.
Yeah.
At the time.
And my kind of curveball game here, simply because I just learned about it and wanted to throw it in, Waku Waku Ski Wonder Spur on the SNES. Mm-hmm. So this was only released for Super Famicom, never made it anywhere else, I don't think. But it's a skiing game that's kind of an F-Zero-like. And except way, way slower. Now, Waku Waku is Japanese for exciting, which this game is not. There wasn't really anything I liked about this game. So the story is there's a major ski competition, and there's a bunch of people you have to compete against. There's different modes in this game, like head-to-head versus stuff like that. But the whole goal is just, it's like F-Zero. You just try to beat everyone else to the finish line. And the tracks look like F-Zero, probably exact same chipset. This was developed by Human Entertainment, which I looked them up, nothing really notable. And also I looked up a lot of the programmers, and no one really did much else other than this game. It's a fine-looking game. The music is kind of like a circus nightmare. But I just saw a quick, you know, YouTube clip of it, and I thought, wow, you know, it's another F-Zero game, but, you know, skiing, I've got to check this out. And there's a reason why it never made it over here. And, you know, if you want to check it out, you could get a loose copy for $5 or a box copy for between 40 and 80 bucks. And
I'm looking at eBay right now. I was surprised how much a box copy goes for.
Yeah, I don't think it sold very well, but
yeah, and it's a game you don't have to know. I mean, my experience with buying import games is if Japanese isn't required, they cost a lot more than if Japanese is required.
There's a lot of options you could pick from here. I was kind of guessing while I was playing where, you know, one trick a lot of people don't realize is you could just download Google Translate on your phone and take a picture of your screen while there's options in Japanese, mm-hmm. and then it'll just tell you what it all says. So there's a little hack around that too.
Bad, really bad for like RPGs, but yes, for
menus, it's fine.
Which of these picks the difficulty? It's fine.
Yes, exactly. So yeah, those are my two games. Let's go to yours.
Yeah, you know, unfortunately, I didn't get to play mine a ton this week. Mostly out of laziness. It's weird when you're too lazy to play a video game. but I went with 1080 snowboarding on N64, which is still like probably the only snowboarding game I've ever liked. I've tried a few different ones, and I've done a lot of RPGs have snowboarding mini games. I don't know why. I don't know if snowboarding is really popular in Japan or something. But this is it's a pretty fun game. Like I thought, the graphics held up pretty well. Like, I don't have any upscalers or anything for the Nintendo 64. I just have it, like, S-Video hook up to a TV. Mm-hmm. And a lot of games end up looking terrible because of that. You know, they look kind of blocky, and no matter what you do with the screen resolution, it's never right. This still actually looks pretty good. Looks pretty good. The controls are pretty solid. You know, I never really had a problem hitting most of the turns. There's some jumps. I didn't spend a lot of time on trying to do tricks and whatnot. But yeah, just straight up, you know, downhill racing, and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah. I own this one. I really like this game. It, like you said, it, out of all the snowboarding games, this one feels the best. It kind of controls the best, I think. And I don't know if that's because of the analog stick on the Nintendo controller, but I think it's kind of funny that there's always like rock walls next to you. You're always like kind of in a cave through this game. I guess that's just what they had to do to kind of make the courses more difficult or something. Like, I've never been on a ski hill where I had giant walls on every side of me. But yeah, I really like this game.
Yeah. And there were a lot of, even though the main developer was not from Nintendo, like there were a lot of Nintendo people involved, the main developer actually had worked on Star Fox and Stunt Race FX before this. So had some experience doing games in this perspective. And then another programmer who worked on it, like, went on to do like all the Forza games or be involved in all the Forza games. So, you know, a lot of, you know, so two guys who I think understood how to make a racing game, you know, that was good. The sound composer is Kenta Nagata, who did a whole bunch of, you know, Wii games and DS games after this. Worked on Wind Waker too, I think. So yeah, it's a really good team they put together for this game. This is the kind of game that you might think of being kind of a throwaway game. You know, like, we just want to, it's the late 90s. We got to have some extreme sports thing. Let's just throw a snowboarding game out. But they actually put, you know, they assembled a pretty solid team and made a really good game.
Yeah, absolutely. It's not as foggy as a lot of other Nintendo 64 games at the time, too.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think there's like a Wiimake on a Wiimake. That's my term for a remake on the Wii. There's a Wiimake.
Yeah.
There's a remake of some sorts on the Wii, I think. Or maybe it's a virtual console game. Probably should look that up first.
They'll probably release it on the Switch and charge $60 for it.
Yeah, I mean, if they end up making, let's see here. There is, the thing that's on Wii U is, yeah, the Nintendo, okay, so that's the Nintendo 64 version. You can download it like virtual console. And then for original Wii, there's the Wiimake. No, it's the original. It also looks like it's a virtual console release. Yeah, this would be if they were to make a Nintendo 64 Classic Mini. This like is an automatic, has to be on it.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, you think we'll get that in 2021?
No.
I think they're just gonna charge for all that stuff on the Switch, make more money that way.
Yeah, or they'll do both. You know, get people to buy both of them. I think there's a chance that it will happen in the future. I don't know the state of Nintendo 64 emulation. I still have never really used Nintendo 64 emulators.
It's getting pretty good, actually, finally.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, cool. What game are you going to do for the next game club?
So I know this one is not going to be accessible to most of our listeners, but I think I'll just pick Doodle World. So I have an incentive to play it. Sorry, I was playing with a 20-sided die here. That was that sound you just heard. I have to have something I can fidget with that doesn't make noise, and normally a die doesn't unless you drop it on the table.
Yeah.
Yeah, then it suddenly becomes noisy. But yeah, I really want to play. I've been looking forward to playing that a while, so I think I will play that on my top loader NES this week. And hopefully everyone that listens to the show backed it, so it won't be a problem for other people to play it.
Yeah. And at the very least, watch a YouTube video of it if you can't get a copy of it. I'm sick of the winter, so I am picking Super Mario Sunshine.
Yes, and I'm going to attempt to play this. My youngest kid recently took this collection from me because she played Super Mario Odyssey a while ago and is curious about the older games, I guess. So I have to pry it away from her because she's actually been playing Super Mario Sunshine today all day.
Nice. She's also sick of the winter too, probably.
I think so, yeah.
Well, all right. If anyone of our listeners plays any of these games or has any cool news to share, has any cool projects, topic ideas, anything retro, please email us, email@retrogameclub.net, or hit us up on Facebook, facebook.retrogameclub.net, or Twitter, @RGCpodcast. And I check all the emails, Zach checks all the social stuff, and yeah, please, it's why we're here. Please write us. We love hearing from you. And we have a few emails here this episode.
Yeah, so let's see. Majors writes in to talk about how mainstream is Q-Bert, because I made a comment that Q-Bert is not very mainstream. He mentioned that he was in Wreck-It Ralph, mm-hmm. which is true, but I think there's a lot of characters in Wreck-It Ralph that people don't know. Like Tapper Guy was in Wreck-It Ralph, and I don't know. I would not consider him a mainstream character either. But does Tapper Guy have a name? He must. Yeah. Oh, yeah, so we talked about Famicom clones and would like us to sometime talk about PC Engine clones, like the PCE Shuttle. Things that looked like the PCE Shuttle. There were apparently a few of those. PCE Shuttle was not a clone. That was a real thing. I wouldn't mind looking at other clone systems. I don't... Have I owned a clone system? Well, I've owned Sears clone systems. I don't know if that counts.
Like the Ataris?
Yeah, I've had a Sears Atari and a Sears Intellivision. Mm. I got rid of both of those, though. So, I only have so much space to store systems, and I am not particularly nostalgic for Sears stuff. Maybe Reddit is selling Sears stock right now. I don't know. Catching up on game club games. Bubble Bobble, a game that he remembers fondly. He played the NES release mostly, and there's apparently a Japanese and European release on the Master System, which I did not know. And I think I know why. He says it's pretty expensive, around $80 to $100 to import that. So that's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
For Tecmo Bowl, he mentions that there is a group from Texas called Retro World Series. So this was at the Too Many Games convention a couple of years ago when we could still do conventions. And they did an 8-bit Tecmo Bowl tournament there, which is cool. Dynamite Heady. It sounds like he didn't play it yet, but has a really good developer, so it must be good, right? And Q-Bert. He said, way back when he was younger, his mother worked at Cal Poly, and he would take the bus into the college to play arcade games in the student union. Because I guess his mom thought that was a good cheap babysitter. And he has fond memories of X's and O's Atari and Super Cobra there as well. But he remembers when Q-Bert was installed fresh out of the box. So I guess they got shipped there. The regular crowd that played Ms. Pac-Man and Robotron gravitated over to check it out, and he definitely got to play it then, but the isometric view was too confusing at his age, and also the really loud slap whenever you died. So I can see as a kid, I mean, I played Q-Bert as a kid, and I also probably didn't get it at first. There is an MSX port made by Konami, apparently. That's cool. And so he's commenting on other other listener feedback about, not remembering feedback for the show until they get home from work. And he just was basically saying he appreciates our show to help him take his mind off other issues come up, which I'm happy to do. And that we generally keep it gaming and project focused and not talking about all the crazy things going on in the world.
Yeah, I don't care to talk about anything other than video games.
Yeah, it's hard not to talk about, like, if you're in a state that is under, you know, some degree of lockdown, it's kind of hard not to mention it. Mm-hmm. But I don't think either of us have ever gone into a pro or anti lockdown discussion on the show. All right, so thank you, Majors. Yeah,
We also have another email from Jim from the Pie Factory podcast, a great podcast that I listen to whenever new episodes come out. And our talk last episode of Car Copiers from the 90s reminded him of his Coleco Atom. It had a cart slot, but it didn't have rewritable media out of the box, but obviously someone created a way to copy cartridges. And he, you know, made his, you know, air quotes backups, but he also backed up his neighbor's games as well. And Activision got ahead of that and did a quick check to make sure if you were actually playing from the cart, and if you weren't, it wouldn't load the game. But obviously hackers got ahead of that pretty quickly. And he also wants to say that Myst is his all-time favorite game.
Okay. you know, I did briefly own an Atom. That's another thing I owned for a while and then got rid of. Because I think I actually got it to mostly use as a word processor, as pathetic as that sounds. But I was different. This was, you know, the late 80s. It seemed reasonably good for that. Turns out it's not. I got it really cheap. And I only had, like, two or three games for it. I think I had, like, a Buck Rogers game that was, like, a Space Harrier ripoff. And, yeah, it seemed like a computer that wasn't good at anything. It tried to be, like, really user-friendly. I think maybe that's why I was using it to, like, write papers and stuff. Because it did have sort of a user-friendly UI, but there were just a lot of... It's hard to describe. There were just a lot of things that were off about it. Like, things that you would expect to work right that just don't.
Like the power supply being in the printer?
Yeah, I mean, problems like that, yeah. Yeah, it was a neat idea, but kind of poorly executed.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely a product of its time. But yeah, Jim, thank you for that email. Major, thank you for that email. Again, if anyone wants to email us, email at retrogameclub.net. And Zach has a few social media items here. What name do you enter when starting a save slot in a retro game? Do you use your name, a nickname, something else? I always just write Rob.
I hope that there's a default name. So I'll spend 30 minutes trying to pick a name.
And someone put...
So sometimes like what I will do, if it's like a... like Baldur's Gate, a game like that, like kind of an open game. Mm-hmm. I'll sometimes name my party after the party of another role-playing game. You know, so like the characters will all be based off Chrono Trigger characters or something. Mm-hmm. Or next time I play Baldur's Gate, I will probably try and build a party that is similar to the main party from Chrono Trigger.
Nice. It's not a bad idea.
I don't know what class the main character would be. I guess Chrono was a sword fighter, which isn't a Baldur's Gate. I mean, it's a fighter in Baldur's Gate. But yeah, but you could also use magic. That's what's confusing when you try and like create recreate a Japanese RPG party in a Western sort of D&D inspired game, you know, because in Western games, the character classes tend to be much, much, stricter.
Yeah. Yeah. let's see. We have, Robert writes in and says, he'll always name the main character if an option Lunk. And Rick writes in, he always uses Fox. And he doesn't know why, but he's done that ever since the first Zelda. All right. This was a very, very strange episode, I think.
Yeah. Again, this is what happens when you're, you know, it's 0 degrees out and it's Saturday. I guess the Super Bowl's tomorrow, which I'll probably watch.
Yeah, I don't know. Since I'm not a sports kind of person and my kids don't really care either, we'll probably catch part of it, but I'm thinking about going to the sled hill at that time because no one else will be there.
Is it above zero there?
It's a few degrees better than where you're at.
Okay. Yeah, luckily you live in a city that's really good for not being a sports fan.
Yeah. Yeah. Really so nothing going for us right now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you're getting an underachieving, overpaid quarterback. So I just read about that trade.
Yeah, I don't know anything about it.
All right. Well, so again, email at retrogameclub.net. And thanks for listening.
Yeah, thank you.